Make yourself comfortable and let's see if there are some questions that have been left. Yes, please. No, jealousy. The one with the wind is jealousy. The one with the earth is the one with the pride. Mm-hmm. It was not so clear on our drawing. Yes, huh? Ah, no feelings there. How can someone go and bring me the drawing that we put in the feelings, the emotions, yes. I go through and I will explain you a little bit more about that. I thought there were two lotuses and one was with the emotions, right? Yes, of course. Wasn't there? Oh, same. Same, but different. Any other question while we are waiting? Yes, please. Yes. Eating? Eating is fantastic. Yes, good Mahamudra meditation. Yes, choiceless awareness. Means that the Mahamudra is not so different from the Vipassana in that sense, because the first is you accept whatever is offered to you. This is the choiceless part. And then the additional part is that as you swallow it, you imagine that you nourish the Buddha inside of you. And maybe you have heard this in Tovana because they have integrated a lot of teachings, but you nourish the timeless awareness. You nourish that awareness of just how things are. And then if we go deeper, then actually the taste itself, like also hearing and so on, but the taste is considered to be dakinis, little messengers of awareness. So every taste, like when it opens the taste in you, actually it opens the space of awareness, and you practice like this. So up here and in the heart, it's the guru, the Buddha guru is being nourished. And it means that you nourish this body in order to nourish awakening inside yourself. Oh, come. Oh, not in Israel, huh? Look, you guys. Huh? In Israel, the fire is not in the west, but it's all over. Look, the conceptual mind then tries to grasp. Now, the idea is not that you learn this. This is not the idea. So there has been a lot of grasping to this. You find this in different books and so on. My God, and if you read Govinda or someone like this, then off we go into all kinds of concepts. And this is not the idea. The idea is that oh yes, the problem is that the Hebrew is from the right to the left, and I get always it's a solution, you say? Yes. So yes. If I can have a pen, or you, Lila, you take your pen and you do it in your own handwriting. You take a book to write on so that you have a support. So look, the message is one that Lila likes to call that, it is a teaching from our tradition, to snatch the jewel from the head of the snake. That's the message behind, which means that you take the best out of the emotion that you can get before the snake bites you. Yes? The mental poisons, you can write them in small, like in the center, it would be ignorance, so lack of awareness, ignorance, fear. This would be like the center, yeah? It's the same. And now, what happens is you cannot snatch, it's not like this. It is actually, it is each time, it is a surprise. Each time something very surprising happens. When you open up into the nature of fear or the manifestations of ignorance, which are like dullness, sleepiness, cloudy, you know, when you are able to look into that, you discover a sphere of openness which is the absolute contrary to what you thought, what you felt before. You felt so closed in and so fearful, there was no space. So that what you discover when the fear is dissolved, actually, that's the spaciousness, that's the center. So this is snatching the jewel of, you know, the true nature of fear is space. It's like before the fear bites you, you look into it and you discover the space. Yes, like this. This is kind of the short teaching. I have to make it short now. We are in a Q&A, we're not in a full teaching. When you do the same process with anger, which will be here in the East, because for the Tibetans, now actually for the Indians, the East is always in front. It's not like the North for us, when in the maps, you know, where we think the North is up. The East is where the sun rises, and this is where you look, and this is from where the world starts. So the East is always in front of you, and where you are is the center. And then if you turn to the right, since it's northern hemisphere, it's the south. And then if you turn to the left, it's the north. So that's how the mandala is arranged. So wherever you are, the agreement is in front of us is east. So in the east, there is on the petal, there's anger, as in our impure vision. And anger is the most stuck experience you can think of. Anger makes you blind. Anger, hatred, it makes you follow blindly a path of revenge. And it makes you the most stubborn possible. Yeah, it's like, it's the opposite of what we discover when we look into the anger, when there is the seeing into the anger. Now, when it happened to me for the first time, it happened with my teacher who lived in the forest with me. He's one of the assistant teachers of Gendo Rinpoche. She was of a different opinion than me, and because I was collecting a book for her, and I got, you know, and I got upset at her and so on. And because I was in retreat, I had this, the mind had the habit of looking into what happens. And in the middle of this anger arising, the mind looked. And I burst out in laughter because I couldn't find the anger anymore. It was gone, but like that. So the surprise event, when you snatch the jewel, yeah, when you snatch that, the surprise is that you find fluidity where before you were completely stuck. And suddenly you find a new flexibility, and there's nothing more flexibility than a good sense of humor. So we were both laughing about the situation because she was anyhow flexible. I had become flexible again. Yes, and like this, there is the flexibility coming back. Okay, now we snatch the jewel of pride. Okay, we go to the south. Yeah, in my mandala, when I look like this, it's there. For you, it's on the other side. So there is nothing more unequal than the feelings of pride and arrogance and haughtiness and me, the best, me, the superior, me, the most important. This creates all the inequality in the world. And it makes always that my desires come first, my opinions count, And when you look into the mental movement, it's a little bit difficult because pride is not so obvious to see, but when you look into that, wow, and again an inner space opens, and then you realize nobody home, nobody there, the me cannot even be found. And at that moment, you also realize that's the same for everybody. We are all equal in the sense that everybody is trying to be so important, but nobody home, nobody there. Big illusion. So we see through the empty nature of, first of all, the person, and then the same comes with all this judging better, worse, and so in the outer world, it comes with other phenomena as well. So the experience of equality is the surprising contrast to the previous experience of inequality, that one was thinking oneself to be superior, which is a great relief. The cure for us when we are proud, and I talk from experience, yes, of course we have all five, but is that slowly, slowly we feel normal. We feel normal. Nobody special. We don't feel inferior. We don't have to become the servant or the slave or something. This is just another form of arrogance, you know? Actually, we feel normal. We don't need to be someone special. And actually, we are no one. And then, you know, we have gone a long way with your pride when these feelings come. So this is snatching the third jewel. Now we go to desire and your question about the fire. Don't think about the direction. It's just has to have a place, so it's in the west. Maybe it's a setting sun, who knows? Yes? But the fire is, of course, the fire of desire. Okay, that is like it burns. Yes? It's a very burning emotion. And in the desire, what happens is that we zoom in, we single in into what we want, and that becomes like the only focus. We want that woman, that man. We want that object. We want that kind of experience, that samadhi, you know? And then this narrowing in, when we look into the desire, then, wow, what happens is that the illusion of this bringing me happiness is gone. There is no desire to be found, nor is there the desirous object to be found. That illusion is gone. But what remains is an incredible capacity to appreciate the world, an incredible aliveness. And the aliveness is actually hidden in the desire. Only it is so much narrowed down that life seems to depend on having that what I want. But actually, life doesn't depend at all on that. So the surprise discovery is the diversity of life with all the capacities to differentiate, which are used in desire, but in the process of narrowing down. Now the capacities of differentiation are used by the free mind who sees the empty nature to see the great variety of experiences as very fresh, vivid, new all the time. And then there is a deep appreciation which is coming from that. And that moves us into the fifth petal, you know, the fifth element, which is the wind element. You call it air, but better call it wind, because here we have the active element of air. It's moving air, yes? Because now we are actually snatching the jewel of jealousy, rivalry, competition, envy, you know, that other aspect of comparing in our world. And this is the dissatisfaction, thinking that I don't have enough. And I compare, I think of how it could be, I look at others, you know, at their partner, and I'm jealous, or what happens to this person earning more money, or he has a better house, and oh, this tree I don't like anymore, I want a better tree, you know? And, you know, always parts of improving. And it's a restless energy. And it is this restless energy of always wanting to improve, which is based on dissatisfaction, that makes us put up the arms and always busyness. And now when we look into that, into the nature of that dissatisfaction, of that jealousy, envy, you know, rivalry, and so on, wanting to be the best, again, same experience, nothing to be found. And, surprise, surprise, completely happy. Because the dissatisfaction is gone, I can see that experience of now as a perfect moment of awakening. And that's why it is called all-perfecting awareness. Whatever the situation is, that moment when the idea that it has to be different, when that idea is gone, when it is dissolved, then this moment, this now, with the crooked tree in front and with my whatever, old Volvo who hardly starts when I turn the key, you know, and so on. You know, all of that is a perfect place to be. And so that indicates also the energy of the wind, because the wind is the driving force which changes our world. It's the easiest to observe. Yeah, the wind moves the leaves and so on. Yeah, that's this this energy of change. It molds the sand, it molds the mountains, and so on. And normally the drive of this karmic energy, the wind energy, is one to always make the world better. And now it can be referred to the all-accomplishing activity of the Buddhas, which is only to show that the mind of now is a perfect place to be. So again, it is the all-perfecting awareness that is then the inherent energy of enlightened activity. So we have snatched all the five jewels. We have them in our pocket now. And we take care not to forget that we have them in our pocket. They're always with us. Okay? That was the long, short explanation. Okay, here we go. Yes, you. Oh, I sorry. Before, there was a finger over there to... Who was that? Yes, you were first. Two? No, just one now. Yes. The Tonglen with a person that is that has hurt us. No, I reserve that for tomorrow, okay? Or tonight. I don't want to overburden you, and I don't want to speak about it now. But I do think that we will take a simple example of someone who has not been completely bad, but just a little bit difficult. Yes? So I will give you that missing piece also. Then you can ask your second question. Good deal, yes. Bodhisattva. Ah, have you ever tried to leave your mind? Yes. 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 You don't want to come back here. No, when you're liberated and then you leave this heavy world. Yes. Uh-huh. But there's a lack of generosity there of not wanting to come back. Uh-huh. Oh. Yes, a readiness, a willingness, there is already seemingly the willingness to open the hand once you are free. First you want to get free and then a little bit before, you can start opening the hand, right? You open now? It could be. You know, it's not so dangerous to open one's hand in the sense of opening one's mind, because it doesn't mean that the others eat you up immediately. You put your effort into the path, and there is different ways of walking the path. And a very good one is to put a lot of energy into the path before thinking so much about sharing with others. Because you're much more effective if you begin sharing the path with others when you have become really stable, like realized. Yeah, then you will be much more effective in sharing. Many practitioners have this wish to share too early, very early, and they do it, and actually they don't really know what they share. So they share the semi-understanding of the Dharma. And this is good, the intention is super, but the effect is not as good as if you had given yourself a little bit more time to make the necessary efforts and study contemplation, meditation, you know, in ethics and so on. And then you take care from a safe spot. Okay? For you, the answer? You can live with it? There is still a jumping board somewhere that you can jump off into some nirvana where for some time you will be tranquil, you know, not disturbed. It is possible too, if ever you need. But maybe when you have developed so much, you feel the need becomes less and less. What do you want to escape when you're able to snatch the jewels everywhere, you know? this means to see the true nature of all the emotions. So we stop using this little bit strange image, but actually it's cute. It's a cute image, but it's seeing the nature of the emotions. If we do that, if we are capable of that, then we don't have to be afraid of samsara. Okay? I repeat for you back there, is there anything to be said about dealing with Alzheimer from the point of view with Dharma practice? You know, my father has died of Alzheimer, and he has really died of it, not of something else. I took care of him in the last 2 years. And I would say the one thing to always keep in mind is that their Buddha nature, their qualities, that let's be more precise and not just call it Buddha nature, the qualities or their capacity to love, to smile, to is all there. And sometimes very much covered up. Some of them, they become even aggressive and so on, you know. There's different ways. There's not just the happy Alzheimer, there's the irritable Alzheimer, and so on. It's all due to what comes up then. But there will be moments in everyone where you see their beautiful qualities which are still fully present. So talk to those qualities. Try to touch those qualities and to relate to them, and you will live many surprises. Right now, the mother of my partner, she is in Alzheimer. And she is hanging in her wheelchair, unable to do something. But when we take her out and we bring her out on the mountains, you know, not high mountains, small mountains in Switzerland, where she has been before, suddenly she wakes up. She even remembers names of the mountains. Or if we bring her to church, where she meets people from the village where she has grown up, she's saying hello to everybody. She doesn't remember them, but with the names, but she remembers their faces, and she feels, then she goes into a feeling of knowing everybody. And in the church, she has started to say hello to everybody, and we drive her out, and on the promenade along the Lake Constance, she waves to everybody, and she's just this radiating lady, and everyone is so touched. Of course, there is dementia, but you see the qualities shining through. So this is maybe the encouragement I can give to all of you if you work with Alzheimer or if in your family you have someone with Alzheimer. If one is oneself diagnosed, you see, since my father died of it, I think it can happen to me. Yes, so I try to be as relaxed as possible before I get the Alzheimer and confident in the nature of my mind. So when the world closes and I cannot express myself, I don't understand the things, I lose orientation and so on, that inwardly the refuge is clear. Inwardly, if you know how to deal with your mind, then you're clear. Actually, another story, the assistant of Gyanar Rinpoche, Purtsela, he was called. He died of Alzheimer. He came over from India. He fled from Tibet with his master, with Gyanar Rinpoche, stayed in India with him, came to Europe with him, and died in Europe, surrounded by us with the Sangha. And he entered Alzheimer, and he was radiant until the end because he had complete confidence in his mind. Everything was disintegrating, but he was always okay. So this is what we need to develop before we get it. Time is now. I take you now. Yes.
talking all the time about nothing is missing and not doing nothing. But there is a place also in my mudra to shamatha practice.
Yes.
So if you can talk a little bit about the meaning of shamatha, because even though it's less fabricated, it's still fabricated.
Very good, very good. You didn't hear, huh? The question is about shamatha practice and Mahamudra, which of course is less fabricated because the view of Mahamudra is there, but somehow shamatha is always with an effort, is a little fabricated. So the place of that. And your question is really pointing towards something I haven't given much attention to. Maybe I stay for another 2 weeks. That's a very good idea. No, actually, I can announce it to you all. I will be coming back. Yes. You have touched my heart so much, and I feel there are so many connections that have popped up. So somehow we will make that possible. We don't yet know how, but okay. So, for the shamatha aspect, it is very... Shamatha means calm abiding, the practice of mental calm. Yes? How do you translate usually? Oh, this is... Now you know. Mental calm, calm abiding. Okay. And I didn't talk much about it because we agreed that the people coming to this retreat, that they already have a practice and that you already have received the instructions. Now, the view changes, but the practice itself doesn't really change. So yes, and when you look into this blue book here, starting somewhere with lesson 24 or something, you have the shamatha instructions on calm abiding. And you will see that the Mahamudra tradition goes through working with all the different senses. You stabilize the mind on an outer visual object, on an inner visual object visualization, on hearing, physical sensation you go through, and you meditate on an outer Buddha statue, you visualize the Buddha inside. And each time you stabilize to in the same way you would stabilize in the Vipassana tradition. Just as, of course, in the Vipassana as well, I don't know how well you are informed, but there are, of course, lots of possibilities, not just the breathing. But in the Mahamudra tradition, the two shamatha practices which are the most used is the breathing and the visualization of the Buddha, because this introduces a feeling of devotion and it's a mirror of our own qualities. So visualizing ourselves in the living presence of the Buddha has become one of the major shamatha practices in the Mahamudra tradition. But the others, pure, impure outer objects, pure, impure inner objects, and so on, we have a little classification of all the different supports, then it's the same. And we go roughly through three stages. The first stage of calm abiding is like a waterfall where the mind is still very active. And you sit next to the waterfall, or maybe in the waterfall, but under the rock, so the water is rushing without pulling you along. The idea is active mind, but you're not involved. First stage. Second stage is like a river, like the flow of a river. So everything has calmed down already. It has calmed and it is the sensations, the physical sensations have become calmer, the mind has become calmer, you're familiar with the thoughts, and there's a feeling of great calm, like sitting near a slowly flowing river, or like being a slowly flowing river. The third stage is like an unmoved, clear lake, completely clear surface of the water in the midday sun, completely luminous. And this third stage of calm abiding is actually where we enter into the jhanas. This is, and then the sequence of the four jhanas and, you know, in the realm of form and the and so on, then this is the same. And then the four additional ones, the eight ones altogether, it's the same jhanas that can be experienced there. And the speciality in the Mahamudra approach to calm abiding is that the when the clarity of at least an advanced second stage or the third stage with the lake-like and the jhanas, when that arises, that one doesn't focus so much on deepening the jhanas and going further and further, but one makes the practitioner, the yogi, purposely create activity in the mind and to loosen up the aversion to the active mind. So one goes, when the capacity to relax and to abide calmly, without thoughts, then one goes into the active mind and asks the practitioner to stimulate thoughts and to look through them. And then again, calm abiding and then active mind. So there is a greater enhancement of uniting the clarity from the shamatha practice with the insight practice of vipassana. And this is the key point in the way we practice shamatha, and I did it with you actually, but I didn't name it. We were, of course, practicing shamatha, but I was giving constantly pointers of insight, of vipassana. Yes? And what is the hallmark of Mahamudra practice is the unity of shamatha and vipassana, that you never separate the two. But since I was asked to bring Mahamudra to this place and to you, then I concentrated more on the view and then practicing shamatha with a different view, which is actually a view of insight, of constantly cultivating insight. And of course, embedded in that bodhicitta, in that deep understanding of the four Brahma Viharas, like you know, we did quite a bit of that. So this is how shamatha is in general practiced. Okay. I didn't see where the next fingers went up. Karen, yes? Yes, yes, of course. Yes.
Now I relax. It's not happening right now. I'm starting to think about the self-care practice when I come home.
Mm-hmm. The only interesting thing in meditation experiences is the insight that is left, the transformation of the view. The rest is just like glass pearls, not real pearls, you know? leave them aside. Or to say it more kindly, all these meditation experiences are just like flowers in a spring meadow, you know, when the rains have fallen and the flowers come out, they blossom and they go. Only the experience, how much it has transformed you, that stays. So, don't even think of having them again. I hope you're happy to have asked the question. Okay, I go all the way back. Yes? Yes. The way it manipulates, the devotion manipulates you or influences you. Are you thinking about devotion towards the living teacher? No. Like when I was talking about imagining the Buddha and developing the devotion, to talk a little bit more about that. Exactly. Yes. Okay. Let me start a little bit further back. There is a reason that you came here. There's a reason that you chose to come into a retreat. If you look at it, there is, to some degree, there is a devotion to understanding, to knowing the truth. There's a devotion to liberation. There is maybe for some of you a devotion to the Buddha's teaching. There is, I have heard, a devotion to Sangha. For some of you, even to serving the Sangha. There is a devotion to the teachers, even not to me, because you come maybe for Lila or Stephen or for some others you have known here. And there is, you know, there are feelings of devotion. Is a difficult term in English, actually, because it translates for me from the Tibetan. It translates a Tibetan word which is made of mergu is translated as devotion, but actually, the part mer is to be inspired to the point of wanting to realize that. So the aspiration, inspiration is so strong. And gupa means respect. So there's a deep respect, and it's a feeling of entering a sacred field. As you know, like something where you say, wow, I give my best. Yeah, like this. So we translate this as devotion, which is not wrong, but actually it means, now I come to your actual question, visualizing the Buddha, then is meant that we see the Buddha so in such a living way with all the qualities of awakening. So it becomes a support for meditating the qualities of love, joy, equanimity, patience, all-encompassing wisdom, you know, and so on and so on. So the Buddha we meditate on becomes the support for our shamatha practice and stimulates our whole aspiration to actually be like that. And then we hear, and even in the meditation, there's an elaborate version where the Buddha is so much alive that he tells you, you are like me. And it's not a devotion where we separate ourselves, but a devotion, an aspiration, a respect, a gratitude to experience that, where that what we feel so inspiring is actually saying, you are like me, then dissolves into light, then the visualization dissolves into light and dissolves into us. So it doesn't stay separate. So the practice of the path of devotion in the Mahamudra tradition is actually only as a method to use something visualized, somebody visualized outside, a sphere of light having the form of a Buddha. This is what we are talking about. Visualized outside, but it will always dissolve into light and come back into us. So no remaining separation. And in the process of meditating on the Buddha, we are actually stabilizing our capacity to dwell on the qualities of our mind. And then later on, having meditated for a while on such visualizations or even an outer support, we can take the support away. We don't need to meditate on the support of this image, of the inner representation, but we can go directly in contact with the qualities. For me, nowadays, no problem to enter into any quality and leave the mind there, dwell on that. So it's a shamatha vipassana practice in the qualities of awakening, which is actually extremely helpful for this meditation practice to deepen those qualities or to make them come forth a little bit more. This is the idea of that practice. If you want to have a follow-up on that question, you are invited to, because I tried my best, but maybe you want to say another word? Come a little closer, yes? Yes. You see, the Tibetan culture, because it is so tantric, has an incredible emphasis on devotion. But it is not only in Tibetan culture that you live that. When you go to Burma or Thailand and to the monasteries and you see how the students sit around the teacher, one of them takes his feet and massages them, and the other, you know, takes care to bring some water. And they sit there, and it's like a communion of minds. The practice of devotion is very much present also in the Theravada tradition, but it is not so formalized. It is something which is actually quite natural, that you feel so much gratitude, and then you almost feel love for, you do feel love. You feel love not only for the teacher, but for the teaching and for the Buddha and for the Sangha. And this is what we are talking about. And it has become a very central way in the Mahamudra tradition to cultivate this, love and aspiration, devotion, to the point of always dissolving then with the Guru, not to leave the Guru outside, but to let it dissolve and become the inner guru as a means to realize Mahamudra, because it's possible through devotion, through love, it is possible to experience states free from ego clinging. So it has become a strong thing in the Mahamudra tradition. And it's beautiful. It's very beautiful. And it can be misused, you know, of course, power trips of gurus and so on. This we don't talk about now, but just so that it is mentioned, we are not talking about that. We are talking about a pure relationship and understanding of what we are doing. Actually, the real devotion is never misused to make someone dependent, but it is used as strength to strengthen the inner guru and to become independent. Okay. I have someone on. No, I don't have anyone on one. Do I? Did we plan this? Yes, I do have two people which are going to wait for me, so I better stop here. Good. There's always this moment of dedication, you know? She wants me to sing. What do you want me to sing? The long version. Sunam de yin tam je zing panin tam ne ne pen ranam ban je ne ke ga na chi balam jum paye Si penso le drova drova so jumpe pa vunji ta kempa da kanto zampo de yang de sinte de da kunji de so da lunjeng ge wan de da tam je dam tu Sangye kusum nempe jen labdang, chene minju dempe jen labdang, gendu minje dempe jen labji, jitang o waman lam, jompa shu.